So, Marina, how is it going? If somebody says good, you know that's not good. That means there is no problem, there's not enough effort, yeah? What? You improved a lot.
Yes.
About your samadhi or what?
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. How long can you stay in samadhi?
I'm working for, I think it's the first stage.
Temporary.
Yes, I'm working for the third one.
Yeah, yeah. Our effort and determination, yeah. Not to go into thinking, not to go into memory, not to go in the future or in the past, you know, just stay at the present moment. That is the most important thing, yeah? I mean, we are with the breath at around the tip of the nose, know the breath goes in, know the breath goes out, know the breath is rough or smooth, know the breath is long or short, know that the breath is detailed or not detailed. The knowingness is the important thing, yeah? The concentration is around the tip of the nose, but the knowing knows that the breath goes in, knows that the breath goes out. In the beginning, as our help, we have the feeling when the breath goes in and we have the feeling when the breath goes out. But sooner or later, when the breath becomes detailed, then we just know. Yeah? Understand? The knowingness about the breath is the most important thing, yeah? That is what we call awareness of the breath, you know, or sati. Knowing that the breath is smooth, knowing that the breath, you know, is detailed, or knowing anything about the breath. And the same holds true for the Buddha, yeah? Is the Buddha fast or small, yeah? Fast or slow, you know, is it deep or shallow, yeah? And we do that until there's no more thoughts coming in, no more memories coming in. Yeah? The future, when there's no more memories and thoughts, there's no future, there's no past, you know, there's just, you know, whatever, you know, it depends on the characteristic of people, just happiness or peacefulness or stillness or whatever, yeah? Yeah? But you feel relieved, yeah? You feel relieved of dukkha, because the moment you enter samadhi, the kilesas have no way to come in. They wait at the door, yeah, until you come out, and they grab hold of you, yeah? Waiting. Yeah, sometimes they try to pull us out, you know. Look at this sensation, look at that sensation, look at, you know, experience, you know. We have an experience and the mind of... make something out of the experience. No, that's not, yeah. We have to know, you know, when we do samatha, and it's called samatha calm meditation, yeah, that there's nothing else that interests us than the breath or, you know, the Buddha. I mean, the experience itself doesn't interest us, you know, but what happens doesn't interest us. We want only to know about one object. Because when the sati becomes better, yeah, and our breath becomes calmer, you know, I mean, slowly, body disappears. Yeah. In the beginning, you know, it seems, you know, that the environment becomes stronger, but then, you know, the sensation of the environment that gets stronger, I mean, fades away in the distance. Yeah. Including our own body until there's only our heart or our citta that we can see or can feel. Until we reach, you know, one-pointedness. And we can only reach one-pointedness when subject and object merge. Merges into one point. And when it merges into one point, yeah, that is the preview of Nibbana. Now, if you want to know what Nibbana is about, that's where you go, yeah? But it's a long way, yeah? So, we are struggling every day, yeah? Walking meditation is actually very helpful, yeah? When we do walking and when we walk fast, we We don't walk slow, yeah? We either walk normally or we walk fast. And the faster we walk, the more easy it is to concentrate the rest of the citta, yeah, on the Buddha or on the breath. Yeah? Okay, so I was talking about, but you probably did not understand because it was Thai, about dukkha. Yeah, the first noble truth, dukkha. Yeah? And we have dukkha. Yeah, in the morning, you know, I mean, we want to sleep again, you know, and we don't want to get up. You know, that's the first form of dukkha. When we are hungry, it's dukkha. You know, we are thirsty, it's dukkha. We need to go to the toilet, it's dukkha. Yeah? Or we are tired, it's dukkha. Yeah? And that is only the physical dukkha, yeah, that we have. Yeah? We have to, you know, I mean, for this, you know, we have our ways to overcome this dukkha. When we are hungry, we eat. You know, we're thirsty, we drink. Yeah. When we are tired, we go to sleep. That is the way, you know, I mean, to overcome, but not to get rid of the dukkha. Yeah. Then there is the dukkha of the heart. Yeah. And that is the most severe dukkha, yeah? I mean, I don't like this, I don't like that, I want this, I don't want this, yeah? No. And where does the dukkha come from? It comes from the second noble truth, you know? Tanha, yeah? Desire, yeah? Desire to be or desire not to be, desire to become or not to become. That creates all the dukkha. A desire to have or not to have, yeah? And that is what we experience, you know, when we go into samadhi, there's no dukkha. That's why we feel happy. Yeah? And it's actually quite easy, you know, if we are determined, yeah. If we determined not to listen to any of the kilesas pulling us, you know, showing us a memory, you know, where does this memory come from? Yeah. That's how they draw us out of samadhi or out of our practice, yeah? Or where is this sensation coming from? Or why is the sound now so loud? And so, all these things don't interest us in samatha meditation, yeah? We just go back to our Buddha, we realize, okay, distraction, go back to the Buddha, or go back to the breath. Hmm? And until we, you know, until the breath, until the knowingness drops back to forward, where it comes, you know, from the heart, you know, and the point of concentration is still there. And until, you know, the subject, you know, the knowingness and the object, the breath or the Buddha, you know, becomes one. When it becomes one, you know, I mean, the whole universe disappears. I mean, this is a good, you know, it's a good insight because then we know this whole universe, you know, is illusion. Yeah? But we believe, you know, I mean, we believe it's real and we think, you know, we have to fight to be in this, yeah, and fight for this or fight for that, you know, that all creates dukkha. Yeah? The third noble truth is that there's an end of dukkha and the fourth noble truth is the path leading to the end of dukkha. And that's why we're here and practicing it. Huh? The first part, you know, is sila and the five precepts are for us when we are here in the monastery, the eight precepts. Huh? The second part is samadhi. Yeah? Samadhi, you know, samadhi is the ability to concentrate. I explained it before. Yeah? And the third part is developing wisdom. Developing wisdom is just like we do in samatha meditation. And the first developing wisdom is in samatha meditation what we are allowed to do when the pain becomes so strong that we are not able to concentrate on the Buddha or on the breath anymore, that we go to the point of pain and investigate it, yeah? I mean, first of all, with all these feelings, we have to embrace these feelings, you know? We have to accept these feelings. Because if we don't accept pain, I mean, we will not be able to investigate pain. So we embrace it, we feel it, you know, we really get a feeling for how it feels, yeah? And then we go to the point of pain, you know, and then we investigate, you know, we ask questions. Investigation is done through asking questions, yeah? Where is the pain, yeah? Is it in the skin? I mean, I have skin since I was born, you know. And when I get up, there's no pain, you know. So where is the pain? So it's not in the skin. Is it in the tendons? Is it in the muscles? Yeah. So we investigate all these things. Is it in the flesh? Is it in the bones? Yeah. Where actually is the pain? And, you know, I mean, you cannot find it, you know. And if you come close to the truth, yeah, then it disappears from one point and appears in another point, yeah. And then we do the same investigation of pain, you know, on the other point, you know, until we come close to the truth, and then moves again, it moves again, you know, we do this until it shows us where it's coming from. That is the first understanding of pain, yeah. So, I mean, for meditation, you know, that's quite useful, yeah. Then we know what is going on whenever we have pain, yeah. So we just accept it, you know, and then we go on. And the investigation, yeah, what do we investigate for developing wisdom, is the five khandhas. What are the five khandhas? Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vinyana. Yeah? So it is the body, it is feeling, mental feeling and bodily feeling. It is memory, association, yeah, and it is thought, yeah, short form of thought, yeah, and it's consciousness. So the first thing that we investigate is this body, yeah. We are born in this body, you know, we will die in this body, you know, I mean, but we are not the body. We can use the three principles or characteristics of this universe, anicca, anatta, dukkha, yeah. Anicca is impermanent, whatever is born, you know, will die, yeah. Whatever arises will cease, yeah. No matter if it is a body, you know, the body is born and it will die, you know, feelings arise and will cease, hmm? Thoughts arise and cease, you know, memories arise and cease. Huh? And then we can use the second principle, you know, I mean anatta. Whatever I can experience cannot be me, cannot be mine, cannot be myself. So, instead of saying my feeling, we say there is a feeling. There's a feeling of pain. Huh? So, yeah, I can look at it, I can observe it. If I tell myself I'm in pain, that's over. The investigation is closed, yeah? And we don't gain any wisdom from it, yeah? It's the same thing, you know? I mean, once we are good at the investigation of pain, then we can investigate other feelings. The feelings of, you know, the feelings of desire, the feelings of wanting something, the feeling of hate, of anger, of whatever, yeah? Because it's the same kind of investigation, yeah? Feel it, embrace it, you know, and look what is there. And compare the feelings. Eh? How does the feeling of anger, you know, compare to the feeling of, you know, of lust, for instance. Yeah? So that is asking the right question. So I'm in the body, you know, the body dies, yeah, using the principle of anicca or anatta or dukkha, yeah. We talked about dukkha before, so we can use these three principles, yeah, or characteristic tendencies, yeah, to investigate, yeah. Or then, you know, the body, you know, what is the body? You know, we go back into, when we were born, we go back, you know, when we learn to walk, or go back, you know, when we learn to talk, or to read, or to write, yeah, and go back into the memory, yeah, and look at it, yeah. How long did it take us, you know, to develop this body, you know, before we could use it? Or to train this body before we could use it? 15, 16, 17 years, yeah? And some of us went to university, you know, and then, you know, I mean, we are finished at 23 or 24. And then we start to work, and then we work for this body to have some food, you know, to have some money, to have some clothing, and to have some medicine when it gets sick, yeah? Until we are retired, you know, and then we just wait for death to come around. Until our next birth, and then the same thing happens again, over and over and over again. Yeah? Just like a hamster in a hamster wheel, it runs and runs, but we don't go anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere. And we are born and we die, you know, and born again and die again and born again, but we don't go anywhere. unless, you know, I mean, our goal is, you know, to open the gate of the hamster wheel or open the gate of samsara to get out of samsara. And that is what the Lord Buddha teaches us, you know, I mean, the way out of samsara. Eliminating the 10 fetters that bind us to the realm of birth and death, or to samsara, yeah? In the first, you know, the first, the first fetter is the fetter of doubt, doubting that there's heaven or that there's hell, doubting that there is, you know, beings in heaven or beings in hell, doubting that there's karma, that there's good karma or bad karma, and the results of karma. Most of the people, you know, I mean, you know, already fail, you know. They don't believe in karma, or they don't believe in heaven, and especially they don't believe in hell. We've all been to hell. Most of us probably have been to heaven, you know, for a while. One of the heavens. So, we don't doubt that, you know, I mean, we don't doubt that there's karma, we don't doubt that there's heaven and hell. That overcomes the first fetter. The second fetter is keeping the precepts, yeah? So when you're here, you keep the 8 precepts. When you're in lay life, you keep the 5 precepts, yeah? Sila pata paramasa, you know, I mean, fondling with precepts, yeah? Sila is precepts, yeah? So we're fondling with precepts, that means, you know, I mean, one day we take them, the next day we break them, yeah? Breaking one or breaking two, you know, taking them again and then breaking them again and then taking them again and breaking them again. That is the second fetter, yeah? And the third fetter is that we believe the body and the citta are one and the same thing. Now let us recall, you know, I mean, the citta is not within the 5 khandhas. The 5 khandhas are rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhana, and vinyana. There's no citta. The citta is the owner of the 5 khandhas. But within the citta are the kilesas, and it's the dhamma, yeah? Or you can call it, it's the light, and it's the darkness. In the darkness we don't see anything, and most of the time we are ruled by the kilesas, so we don't really see anything what is happening. We think we see, you know, but we really don't see the truth of it. So the third fetter, you know, is the most important thing, you know, belief that we are the body, yeah? As I said before, the citta is born in this body, dies in the body, you know, and believes it is the body. Just like we as human beings are born in the car, you know, die in the car, and never get out of the car, so we have to believe that we are the car, yeah? Or we tend to believe that we are the car, just like most of the people believe we are the body, yeah? That's why some people, you know, are afraid, you know, to die, yeah? I mean, when our car, you know, car totals, you know, and then we have to put it to the scrape, yeah, we just look for the next car. And that's the same thing. When we die, you know, when this body dies, you know, we just look for the next body. And that goes on and on, goes on and goes on. Unless, you know, we put a stop to it. So seeing that the body is not self is, you know, extricating ourselves, the citta, from the body and seeing the body clearly. Yeah? And we can do that, you know, I mean, with a simple exercise, putting all the parts, 32 parts of the body in front of us. Yeah? And then, you know, the citta sees the body parts, you know, and reflects upon what is the body. Yeah? What body part, you know, constitutes the body? Yeah? The body, yeah? Because we think all the parts are the body, you know, is the heart the body, you know, is the brain the body, is what part of the body? Is the leg the body, you know, can we live without a leg, can we live without lungs, can we live without, yeah, can we live without the heart or the brain, yeah? So there are important parts, you know, but there are some parts of them are not so important. But look at them, you know, and, you know, once all the parts of the body are in front of you and you see them with your inner eyes, yeah, I mean, this is for a short moment, there's a separation. Yeah? And this separation is important for us to realize the citta and the body are two different things. And that is the third fetter. Yeah? To realize that the body and the citta are not the same thing. I mean, we might have to do this exercise, yeah, for 100 times or 1,000 times or 10,000 times or maybe even 1,000,000 times before it really clicks into, yeah. And once, you know, once the 3 fetters, you know, are cut down to a minimum, you know, we go into Apana Samadhi, you know, and then get rid of the fetters, yeah. The Apana Samadhi and the Magga are very similar, you know, it cuts, yeah. The moment we go into Apana, you know, or Magga, you know, then it cuts the fetters, you know, for good, you know, and then we enter the stream. Okay, so I think that is enough. Yeah, I mean, you have any questions, you are now allowed to ask them, yeah. No questions from the audience, yeah? By the way, what is your name? Samaruta. Samaruta. Okay. Do we have questions from the web? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
When you say at least get to the gate before you die, do you mean Apana Samadhi or do you mean stream entry?
Stream entry. Apana Samadhi, you know, I mean, is something that is not absolutely necessary, yeah. At least, yeah. So, I mean, at least go towards the gate, you know, before you die. Yeah. If hopefully you are at the gate, you know, so in your next life you can enter stream entry. Yeah. Next.
I talked with a Tibetan Rinpoche and they stated that the self exists. However, from my own experience and the Theravada teachings, I do not believe there is a self. Is it correct in Theravada Buddhism that the self is merely an illusion, a collection of fragments aggregated over this life and past ones?
That is true, the self, you know, but, you know, I mean, the self is, yeah, is a mixture of what we believe we are, and we believe we are the body, we believe we are feelings, we believe we are memories, and we believe in our association of memories and thoughts, you know, and consciousness. And that what creates the self. If we go into Upachara Samadhi, for instance, then the self is diminished quite a bit. But there's still, you know, the something, you know, that experience something, yeah? If we go, of course, into Apana Samadhi, there is no self at all, yeah? But the moment we come out of Apana Samadhi, the self is created through memories, through thoughts, through feelings, you know, through the 5 khandhas. And that is what he has to understand. What the problem is with a lot of people, you know, in the West is that they deny there is a self, you know, so I can do whatever I want, you know, I mean, there is no retribution. Yeah? And that is not true. Yeah? And the self, of course, you know, like he said, you know, is created over lifetimes, yeah. Eon of lives that we have lived as devas, lived as animals, lived as ghosts, we are being in the hell realm, that are all the facets on our diamond, you know, that we call the citta, or yeah, these diamonds, these facets on the diamond creates a self, yeah. But the nature of the diamond, you know, is the same for every being, yeah. No matter where this being is, yeah. But the facets, you know, when we look at the diamond, we don't see the nature of the diamond, we only see the facets, and the facets is that what creates self. Okay?
Okay. Regarding the 7 factors of enlightenment, it seems virya and pity are often underemphasized today. Yet in my own experience, pity can be cultivated quite powerfully through intentional practice, such as metta or energy-focused contemplation, and this supports deeper meditation and even intuitive capacities. So, jetzt kommt die Frage, is there scope for more deliberate cultivation of pity in training.
I mean, if you train samadhi, you know, I mean, if you enter samadhi, there's pity. Yeah. So, you don't have to create metta, you know, I mean, it's probably a waste of time, yeah, to create metta. Create samadhi and you see clearly. With samadhi, you're not only creating, you know, this pity, yeah, because you see once for all, you know, forever, that there is nothing, you know, that is worthwhile in this world, you know, that we can hanker after, because in samadhi, all these things are gone, you know, and there's just this happiness or this pity, you know, or whatever he calls it, the joy, you know, and or stillness or peacefulness, whatever he experienced. And his experience, you know, depends on his characteristic tendency. Yes, pity can be a motivation for a lot of people, yeah, but dukkha can be also a motivation. So, I mean, the seven enlightenment factors are the seven enlightenment factors, you know, I mean, it's not, I mean, the Lord Buddha stressed it, you know, I mean, but he stresses all the enlightenment factors. Effort, especially, determination, you know, and samadhi, you know.
Okay, jetzt haben wir, ich glaube, ungefähr fünf Fragen von einer Person zur Praxis.
Ja, okay.
The knower and the blankness. When the mind tries to turn back on itself, it encounters stillness or blankness accompanied by a subtle, gentle pulsation at the center. Is this blankness the knower, or is the knower that which is aware of even this blankness and pulsation? I would be deeply grateful for your guidance in how to proceed further.
You cannot know the knower because the knower is what you are. I mean, you are the subject, you know, you cannot know, yeah. I mean, you can know objects, you know, and whatever he perceives, the subject, the knowingness, knows these objects. Yeah, that's a differentiation.
Nächste Frage. Stillness or active effort. Initially, the conscious mind used to observe and actively reflect on the changing nature of sensations.
Mm-hmm.
Then the subconscious began to understand the mind's patterns and let go on its own. Now there is complete silence. The mind has no anchor. Should I actively engage with wisdom during the stillness or simply stay with the stillness?
I mean, if you stay with the stillness, there is no wisdom developed. And only wisdom is able to cut the fetters, you know, the 10 fetters. Like I explained today in the talk, you know, I explained the 3 fetters. So he still has to investigate, yeah? I mean, samadhi is samadhi, you know, and vipassana is vipassana. Vipassana is the developing of wisdom. And for that, we have to have an object, you know, be the object of the body, be the object of feeling, and investigate it for what they are. If we don't truly understand, you know, what the body is, yeah, and the body investigation goes very, very long until the stage of anagami, yeah. And if you don't know what feeling we are constantly swayed by it. But of course in this state of samadhi, we are not swayed by anything. So, I mean, it's not that useful. I mean, remember, you know, remember my venerable teaching master, you know, I mean, Lung Pu Man, you know, after 5 years, he chased him out of samadhi and said, now go ahead and do your work. Next.
Collapse of physical body. During meditation, it sometimes feels as if the physical body is about to fall apart.
Yeah.
Not as in dissolution of solidity, but a literal collapse. However, there is a subtle existential fear and the mind hesitates to let go of the body fully. How can the mind be supported in releasing its identification with the body?
You have, I mean, I just explained it, yeah? Investigation of the body, yeah? I mean, seeing that you are not the body. But he has to also to investigate fear, because that is the fear of self, yeah? To lose self, yeah? But if he is actually in samadhi, he should reflect upon when he is in the state of stillness, there is no self. So what is he afraid of? That is what he has to investigate. But he also has to investigate the body, you know, just like I explained, yeah? I mean, see, that is the body, there's the body and there's the citta, yeah? The citta is the owner of the body, yeah? And it can do with the body whatever the citta wants to do with the body. But it is intrinsic, you know, that it, or he thinks, you know, that he is the body, yeah? And this illusion he has to get rid of, by the way I described in the talk, yeah? Next.
Change in anapana. Earlier, breath awareness was clear and localized below the nostrils. Now the natural breath is discernible only after the mind first settles in the center. It feels as if the whole body and mind are breathing and pulsating from that point. But if I try to take intentional or forceful breath, it causes an immediate headache. Is this shift natural or is something wrong?
There's something wrong, yeah? I mean, if you stay, yeah? I mean, I explained it so often, you know, how to do samatha. I mean, when there is no more feeling about the nostrils, you know, I mean, knowing about the breath, every second of the breath, is the in-breath starting, if the in-breath at its height, if the in-breath, you know, slowly changing, you know, what is the point between the in-breath and the out-breath, you know? I mean, following the breath, you know, until the breath becomes so subtle that that he cannot feel the breath at its nostril anymore, but he knows about the breath. And that knowing is the only thing that is important in our samatha practice.
Yeah, reversing the flow of consciousness. Venerable Ajahn Mahabua often speaks about reversing the flow of consciousness inward. Does this refer?
No, he never talks about consciousness you cannot reverse.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a misunderstanding, you know. I mean, what he says, what Lungda Mahabua says is, you know, to focus inside instead of focusing outside. But consciousness, you know, consciousness is knowing that something has come into the sense contact, yeah? And then memory is, I mean, people just don't know anything, yeah? People just don't look, you know, don't investigate things, yeah? When there's a sense contact, you know, that is what this vijnana is, yeah? There's a sense contact. Then memory starts to operate, you know, and defines, you know, what kind of sense contact, what kind of senses were triggered. Is it the hearing sense? Is it the smelling sense? Is it the tasting sense? Or is it the touching sense, yeah? Or is it the thinking sense, yeah? One of the senses has been triggered, yeah? What Lungda Mahabua means, you know, with reversing, it's not reversing, you know, instead of looking outside, to look inside, yeah? Now, what is happening inside our heart, yeah? Before you move your body, you know, there must be a thought, you know, that you want to move the body. And then you can ask, why should I move the body, you know, before you actually move it? And before you can actually move the body, there needs to be an intention coming from the citta, sending some signal up to the brain, you know, and then the brain, you know, starts to move the hand or the foot or whatever. These are things that we can all experience in our, you know, in our practice, but people just assume, yeah?
Das noch zu Ende zu bringen.
Okay.
Also, I wanted to clarify that this gentle and subtle pulsation at the center is a string of consciousness arising moment to moment, which the mind falsely assumes to be a self.
No, that's completely wrong. I mean, he doesn't have enough sati, you know. I mean, if consciousness arises and ceases, what it does, and he does it so quickly, yeah, that within the blink of an eye, you know, there are 3,000, you know, of this conscious moment, yeah. I mean, he would be so utterly amazed, you know, I mean, when he sees, you know, the state of unconsciousness, when there is no consciousness. And then he sees, you know, the state of consciousness arising, and then he sees the state of consciousness disappearing. I mean, he would be so utterly amazed about this experience, and I wouldn't talk this kind of nonsense.
Okay, jetzt haben wir einen anderen Set von Fragen von einer Person, von einer anderen Person.
Ja.
Most of my days goes in trying to observe my fears, feelings, bodily pains. Whenever I get impatient, I then bring my awareness to this feeling of expectation. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, eventually I lose patience because of views such as it would take years of being aware of these feelings, fears, and pains to understand. I am not seeing any major improvements. I don't know what's the parameter to judge if I am doing it rightly. I am totally out of touch with wisdom. Parts of practice I was doing only reflecting till now, and even reflection to me seems to give no results. And it's just, my sati isn't strong enough even after saying to myself that I will try to be very mindful this time. So what's the point of doing reflection with half sati?
You still see something. Yeah? You don't see through it, you know, but you still see something. The reflection, yeah, it is important. Yeah, I mean, just to go through the day, see what you're doing and what the results of your doing is. See your speech and see what the results of your speech is. Yeah, this reflection, you know, over time, you know, just people have no patience anymore. Yeah, you should first stop. You know, I mean, to using his smartphone. You know, and the less he uses his smartphone, you know, I mean, hopefully his sati will improve. Yeah, the important thing is, you know, to practice samatha, and I explain it so often. I mean, the way to go is, am I with the Buddha, am I with the breath, and I'm on the right path? Yeah? Am I not with the Buddha or not with the breath? Am I with feeling or something else? You know, I'm on the wrong path. The samatha practice develops a sati, knowing the breath. I mean, I explained it today in the talk, you know, I explained it also in answering some of the questions. So, okay? What? Okay.
I'm getting more and more aware of the dukkha relating to my body, all my insecurities. As I am being more mindful, I feel like I am the only person in the world with these stupid fears, other people seem relaxed with themselves in their behavior, and then I wonder how will I get rid of these. But getting rid in itself is a craving, so I just keep observing. But then how and when will I finally be able to free of these inner ridiculous thoughts patterns?
I mean, counteract these thoughts patterns, you know, and without craving you will never ever get out of the samsara. So we have to crave for the right things, huh? So we have to crave for samadhi, you know, but not expecting samadhi. Yeah? We have to crave, you know, for samadhi, you know, by doing the work that leads to samadhi. Or we have to crave, you know, for wisdom, you know, by going the path along, you know, that leads to wisdom. And the path along is, you know, from one city to the other. If you don't walk, you don't get there. So if you don't do, you know, like today I explained, you know, samatha, you know, the practice of samatha, we won't get to sati, yeah? We won't be able to develop sati if we don't do the correct work. And it is the same thing, we don't acquire wisdom if we don't do the correct work. And I explained that as well today. Okay? So, any other questions coming up? If not, you know, then we finish the talk and finish the questions. Yeah. It is very nice now. The temperature is cool, so we can walk a lot, you know. And, you know, for us as practitioners, we actually don't go to sleep when we are tired. We go to sleep or we lie down when we are not tired. And the result of it, you know, I mean, you don't even, you know, the head is not yet on your pillow, you know, and you're already asleep. But when we tired, we don't go. We fight, you know, we investigate what is tiredness, yeah? Huh? Tiredness is most of the time, you know, it is, we are not any more interested in our practice. That's why the tiredness comes up, you know, and we are fooled by it. Oh, yeah, we are tired. No. Yeah? I use a trick, you know, just use a trick of thinking about something exciting for 3 or 4 minutes, and then you have all the energy back. Yeah? So, then you know it was a trick of the kilesas, yeah, to go to sleep because they don't want to. That is so boring, it's so boring, you know, Buddha or the breath, it's so boring, you know, oh, I'm so tired, yeah? You have to trick them, the kilesas, or find out, you know, what kind of trick they use, you know, on you. Okay?